The arrow struck it in the chest, and it pitched forward, on its face. The other goblins slowed slightly, reaching for their own bows. Tanis fitted another arrow to his bow as Flint reached the shoreline.
"Wait! I'm coming!"
The dwarf gasped, and he plunged into the water and sank like a rock.
"Grab him!"
Sturm yelled.
"Tass, row back! There he is! See? The bubbles!"
Caramon was splashing frantically in the water, hunting for the dwarf. Tass tried to row back, but the weight in the boat was too much for the Kender. Tanis fired again, missed his mark, and swore beneath his breath. He reached for another arrow. The goblins were swarming down the hillside.
"I've got him!"
Caramon shouted, pulling the dripping, spluttering dwarf out by the collar of his leather tunic.
"Quit struggling,"
he told Flint, whose arms were flailing out in all directions. But the dwarf was in a complete state of panic. A goblin arrow thunked into Caramon's chain mail and stuck there like a scrawny feather.
"That does it,"
the warrior grunted in exasperation, and with a great heave of his muscular arms, he pitched the dwarf into the boat as it moved out away from him. Flint caught hold of a seat and held on, his lower half sticking out over the edge. Sturm grabbed him by the belt and dragged him aboard as the boat rocked alarmingly. Tanis nearly lost his balance and was forced to drop his bow and catch hold of the side to keep from being thrown into the water. A goblin arrow stuck into the gunwale, just barely missing Tanis's hand.
"Row back to Caramon, Tass,"
Tanis yelled.
"I can't,"
shouted the struggling Kender. One swipe of an out-of-control oar nearly knocked Sturm overboard. The knight yanked the Kender from his seat. He grabbed the oars and smoothly brought the boat around to where Caramon could get hold of the side. Tanis helped the warrior climb in, then yelled to Sturm,
"Pull!"
The knight pulled on the oars with all his strength, leaning over backward as he thrust the oars deep into the water. The boat shot away from shore, accompanied by the howls of angry goblins. More arrows whizzed around the boat as Caramon, dripping wet, plopped down next to Tanis.
"Goblin target practice tonight,"
Caramon muttered, pulling the arrow from his mail shirt.
"We show up beautifully against the water."
Tanis was fumbling for his dropped bow when he noticed Raistlin sitting up.
"Take cover,"
Tanis warned, and Caramon started to reach for his brother, but the mage, scowling at both of them, slipped his hand into a pouch on his belt. His delicate fingers drew out a handful of something as an arrow struck the seat next to him. Raistlin did not react. Tanis started to pull the mage down, then realized he was lost in the concentration necessary to a magic user casting a spell. Disturbing him now might have drastic consequences, causing the mage to forget the spell, or worse, to miscast the spell. Tanis gritted his teeth and watched. Raistlin lifted his thin, frail hand and allowed the spell component he had taken from his pouch to fall slowly from between his fingers onto the deck of the boat. Sand, Tanis realized.
"Ast Tasarak, Sinuralan, Krinawi,"
Raistlin murmured, and then moved his right hand slowly in an arc parallel to the shore. Tanis looked back toward the land. One by one, the goblins dropped their bows and toppled over, as though Raistlin were touching each in turn. The arrows ceased. Goblins farther away howled in rage and ran forward, but by that time Sturm's powerful strokes had carried the boat out of range.
"Good work, little brother,"
Caramon said heartily. Raistlin blinked and seemed to return to the world. Then the mage sank forward. Caramon caught him and held him for a moment. Then Raistlin sat up and sucked in a deep breath, which caused him to cough.
I'll be all right,
he whispered, withdrawing from Karaman.
What did you do to them?
Asked Tanis as he searched for enemy arrows to drop them overboard. Goblins occasionally poisoned the arrow tips.
I put them to sleep.
Raistlin hissed through teeth that clicked together with the cold.
And now I must rest.
He sank back against the side of the boat. Tanis looked at the mage. Raistlin had indeed gained in power and skill.
I wish I could trust him,
the half-elf thought. The boat moved across the star-filled lake. The only sounds to be heard were the soft, rhythmic splashing of the oars in the water and Raistlin's dry, racking cough. Tasselhoff uncorked the wineskin, which Flint had somehow retained on his wild dash, and tried to get the chilled, shivering dwarf to swallow a mouthful, but Flint, crouched at the bottom of the boat, could only shudder and stare out across the water. Gold Moon sank deeper into her fur cape. She wore the soft, doe-skin breeches of her people with a fringed overskirt and belted tunic. Her boots were made of soft leather. Water had sloshed over the edge of the boat when Karaman had thrown Flint overboard. The water made the doe-skin cling to her, and soon she was chilled and shivering.
Take my cape,
Riverwind said in their language, starting to remove his bearskin cloak.
No,
she shook her head.
You have been suffering from the fever. I never get sick, you know that.
She looked up at him and smiled.
You may put your arm around me, warrior. The heat from our bodies will warm us both.
Is that a royal command, chieftain's daughter?
Riverwind whispered teasingly, drawing her close to him.
It is,
she said, leaning against his strong body with a sigh of contentment. She looked up into the starry heavens, then stiffened, and caught her breath in alarm.
What is it?
Riverwind asked, staring up. The others in the boat, although they had not understood the exchange, heard Gold Moon's gasp and saw her eyes transfixed by something in the night sky. Karaman poked his brother and said,
Raist, what is it? I don't see anything.
Raistlin sat up, cast back his hood, then coughed. When the spasm passed, he searched the night sky. Then he stiffened, and his eyes widened. Reaching out with his thin, bony hand, Raistlin clutched Tanis's arm, holding on to it tightly as the half-elf involuntarily tried to pull away from the mage's skeletal grip.
Tanis!
Raistlin wheezed, his breath nearly gone.
The constellations!
What? Tanis was truly startled by the pallor of the mage's metallic gold skin and the feverish luster of his strange eyes.
What about the constellations?
Gone!
Rasped Raistlin, and lapsed into a fit of coughing. Karaman put his arm around him, holding him close, almost as if the big man were trying to hold his brother's frail body together. Raistlin recovered, wiped his mouth with his hand. Tanis saw that his fingers were dark with blood. Raistlin took a deep breath, then spoke.
The constellation known as the Queen of Darkness, and the one called Valiant Warrior, both gone. She has come to Kryn, Tanis, and he has come to fight her. All the evil rumors we have heard are true. War, death, destruction.
His voice died in another fit of coughing. Karaman held him.
Come on, Raist, he said soothingly. Don't get so worked up. It's only a bunch of stars.
Only a bunch of stars,
Tanis repeated flatly. Sturm began to row again, pulling swiftly for the opposite bank. Chapter 6 Night in a Cave. Dissension. Tanis decides. A chill wind began to blow across the lake. Storm clouds rolled across the sky from the north, obliterating the gaping black holes left by the fallen stars. The companions hunched down in the boat, pulling their cloaks tighter around them as the rain spattered down. Caramon joined Sturm at the oars. The big warrior tried to talk to the knight, but Sturm ignored him. He rowed in grim silence, occasionally muttering to himself in Solamnic.
"Sturm, there! Between the great rocks to the left!"
Tanis called out, pointing. Sturm and Caramon pulled hard. The rain made sighting the landmark rocks difficult, and for a moment, it seemed that they had lost their way in the darkness, when the rocks suddenly loomed ahead. Sturm and Caramon brought the boat around. Tanis sprang out over the side and pulled it to shore. Torrents of rain lashed down. The companions climbed from the boat, wet and chilled. They had to lift the dwarf out. Flint was stiff as a dead goblin from fear. Riverwind and Caramon hid the boat in the thick underbrush. Tanis led the rest up a rocky trail to a small opening in the cliff face. Goldmoon looked at the opening dubiously. It seemed to be no more than a large crack in the surface of the cliff. Inside, however, the cave was large enough for all of them to stretch out comfortably.
"Nice home," Tasselhoff glanced around. "Not much in the way of furniture."
Tanis grinned at the kender.
"It will do for the night. I don't think even the dwarf will complain about this. If he does, we'll send him back to sleep in the boat."
Tass flashed his own smile back at the half-elf. It was good to see the old Tanis back. He had thought his friend unusually moody and indecisive, not the strong leader he had remembered from earlier days. Yet, now that they were on the road, the glint was back in the half-elf's eyes. He had come out of his brooding shell and was taking charge, slipping back into his accustomed role. He needed this adventure to get his mind off his problems, whatever those might be. The kender, who had never been able to understand Tanis's inner turmoil, was glad this adventure had come along. Caramon carried his brother from the boat and laid him down as gently as he could on the soft, warm sand that covered the floor of the cave while Riverwind started a fire. The wet wood crackled and spit, but soon caught fire. The smoke curled up toward the ceiling and drifted out through a crack. The plainsmen covered the cave's entrance with brush and fallen tree branches, hiding the light of the fire and effectively keeping out the rain.
"If it's in well," Tanis thought, as he watched the barbarian work, "he could almost be one of us."
Sighing, the half-elf turned his attention to Raistlin. Kneeling down beside him, he looked at the young mage with concern. Raistlin's pale face, reflected in the flickering firelight, reminded the half-elf of the time he and Flint and Caramon had barely rescued Raistlin from a vicious mob intent on burning the mage at the stake. Raistlin had attempted to expose a charlatan cleric who was bilking the villagers out of their money. Instead of turning on the cleric, the villagers had turned on Raistlin. As Tanis had told Flint, people wanted to believe in something. Caramon busied himself around his brother, placing his own heavy cloak over his shoulders. Raistlin's body was racked by coughing spasms, and blood trickled from his mouth. His eyes gleamed feverishly. Goldmoon knelt beside him, a cup of wine in her hand.
"Can you drink this?"
she asked him gently. Raistlin shook his head, tried to speak, coughed, and pushed her hand away. Goldmoon looked up at Tanis.
Perhaps my staff? She asked.
No!
Raistlin choked. He motioned for Tanis to come near him. Even sitting next to him, Tanis could barely hear the mage's words. His broken sentences were interrupted by great gasps for air and fits of coughing.
The staff will not heal me, Tanis,
he whispered.
Do not waste it on me. If it is a blessed artifact, its sacred power is limited. My body was my sacrifice for my magic. The damage is permanent. Nothing can help.
His voice died. His eyes closed. The fire suddenly flared as wind whirled around the cavern. Tanis looked up to see Sturm pulling the brush aside and entering the cave, half-carrying Flint, who stumbled along on unsteady feet. Sturm dumped him down beside the fire. Both were soaking wet. Sturm was clearly out of patience with the dwarf and, as Tanis noted, with the entire group. Tanis watched him with concern, recognizing the signs of a dark depression that sometimes overwhelmed the knight. Sturm liked the orderly, the well-disciplined. The disappearance of the stars, the disturbance of the natural order of things had shaken him badly. Tasselhoff wrapped a blanket around the dwarf who sat huddled on the cave floor, his teeth chattering in his head so that his helm rattled.
B-b-b-boat,
was all he could say. Tass poured him a cup of wine, which the dwarf drank greedily. Sturm looked at Flint in disgust. I'll take the first watch, he said, and moved toward the mouth of the cave. Riverwind rose to his feet.
I will watch with you, he said harshly.
Sturm froze, then turned, slowly, to face the tall plainsman. Tanis could see the knight's face etched in sharp relief by the firelight, dark lines carved around the stern mouth. Although shorter in stature than Riverwind, the knight's air of nobility and the rigidity of his stance made the two appear almost equal.
I am a knight of Salamnia, Sturm said. My word is my honor, and my honor is my life. I gave my word, back in the inn, that I would protect you and your lady. If you choose to dispute my word, you dispute my honor, and therefore you insult me. I cannot allow that insult to remain between us. Sturm!
Tanis was on his feet. Never taking his eyes from the plainsman, the knight raised his hand.
Don't interfere, Tanis, Sturm said.
Well, what will it be? Swords? Knives? How do you barbarians fight? Riverwind's stoic expression did not change. He regarded the knight with intense, dark eyes. Then he spoke, choosing his words carefully.
I did not mean to question your honor. I do not know men and their cities, and I tell you plainly, I am afraid. It is my fear that makes me speak thus. I have been afraid ever since the blue crystal staff was given to me. Most of all, I am afraid for Gold Moon.
The plainsman looked over at the woman, his eyes reflecting the glowing fire.
Without her, I die. How could I trust?
His voice failed. The stoic mask cracked and crumbled from pain and weariness. His knees buckled, and he pitched forward. Sturm caught him.
You couldn't, the knight said. I understand. You are tired, and you have been sick.
He helped Tanis lay the plainsman at the back of the cave.
Rest now.
I will stand watch. The knight shoved aside the brush and, without saying another word, stepped outside into the rain. Gold Moon had listened to the altercation in silence.
Now,
She moved their meager possessions to the back of the cave and knelt down by River Wind's side. He put his arm around her and held her close, burying his face in her silver-gold hair. The two settled in the shadows of the cave, wrapped in River Wind's fur cape. They were soon asleep, Gold Moon's head resting on her warrior's chest. Tanis breathed a sigh of relief and turned back to Raistlin. The mage had fallen into a fitful sleep. Sometimes he murmured strange words in the language of magic, his hand reaching out to touch his staff. Tanis glanced around at the others. Tasselhoff was sitting near the fire, sorting through his acquired objects. He sat cross-legged, the treasures on the cave floor in front of him. Tanis could make out glittering rings, a few unusual coins, a feather from the goat-sucker bird, pieces of twine, a bead necklace, a soap doll, and a whistle. One of the rings looked familiar. It was a ring of elven make, given Tanis a long time ago by someone he kept on the borders of his mind. It was a finely carved, delicate ring of golden, clinging ivy leaves. Tanis crept over to the kender, walking softly to keep from waking the others. Tas? He tapped the kender on the shoulder and pointed. My ring.
Is it?
Asked Tasselhoff, with wide-eyed innocence.
Is this yours? I'm glad I found it. You must have dropped it at the inn.
Tanis took the ring with a wry smile, then settled down next to the kender.
Have you got a map of this area, Tas?
The kender's eyes shone.
A map? Yes, Tanis, of course.
He swept up all his valuables, dumped them back into a pouch, and pulled a hand-carved wooden scroll case from another pouch. He drew forth a sheaf of maps. Tanis had seen the kender's collection before, but it never failed to astonish him. There must have been 100, drawn on everything from fine parchment to soft kid leather to a huge palmetto leaf.
I thought you knew every tree personally around these parts, Tanis.
Tasselhoff sorted through his maps, his eyes occasionally lingering on a favorite. The half-elf shook his head.
I've lived here many years, he said. But let's face it, I don't know any of the dark and secret paths.
You won't find many to Haven.
Tas pulled a map from his pile and smoothed it out on the cave floor.
The Haven Road through Solace Vale is quickest, that's for certain.
Tanis studied the map by the light of the dying campfire.
You're right, he said. The road is not only quickest, it seems to be the only possible route for several miles ahead. Both south and north of us lie the Carolus Mountains. No passes there.
Frowning, Tanis rolled up the map and handed it back.
Which is exactly what the theocrat will figure.
Tasselhoff yawned.
Well,
he said, putting the map back carefully into the case.
It's a problem that will be solved by wiser heads than mine.
I'm along for the fun.
Tucking the case back into a pouch, the kender lay down on the cave floor, drew his legs up beneath his chin, and was soon sleeping the peaceful sleep of small children and animals. Tanis looked at him with envy. Although aching with weariness, he couldn't relax enough for sleep. Most of the others had dropped off, all but the warrior watching over his brother. Tanis walked over to Caraman.
Turn in, he whispered. I'll watch Raistlin. No,
the big warrior said. Reaching out, he gently pulled a cloak up closer around his brother's shoulders.
He might need me. But you've got to get some sleep. I will.
Caraman grinned.
Go get some sleep yourself, nursemaid,
Your children are fine. Look, even the dwarf is out cold.
I don't have to look, Tanis said.
The theocrat can probably hear him snoring in solace.
Well, my friend, this reunion was not much like we planned 5 years ago.
What is?
Caraman asked softly, glancing down at his brother. Tanis patted the man's arm, then lay down and rolled up in his own cloak and, at last, fell asleep. The night passed, slowly for those on watch, swiftly for those asleep. Caraman relieved Sturm. Tanis relieved Caraman. The storm continued, unabated all night, the wind whipping the lake into a white-capped sea. Lightning branched through the darkness like flaming trees, thunder rumbled continually. The storm finally blew itself out by morning, and the half-elf watched day dawn, gray and chill. The rain had ended, but storm clouds still hung low. No sun appeared in the sky. Tanis felt a growing sense of urgency. He could see no end to the storm clouds massing to the north. Autumn storms were rare, especially ones with this ferocity. The wind was bitter, too, and it seemed odd that the storm came out of the north when they generally swept east across the plains. Sensitive to the ways of nature, the strange weather upset Tanis nearly as much as Raistlin's fallen stars. He felt a need to get going, even though it was early in the morning yet. He went inside to wake the others. The cave was chill and gloomy in the gray dawn, despite the crackling fire. Goldmoon and Tasselhoff were fixing breakfast. Riverwind stood in the back of the cave, shaking out Goldmoon's fur cloak. Tanis glanced at him. The plainsman had been about to say something to Goldmoon as Tanis entered, but fell silent, contenting himself with staring at her meaningfully as he continued his work. Gold Moon kept her eyes lowered, her face pale and troubled. The barbarian regrets having let himself go last night, Tanis realized.
There is not much food, I'm afraid, Gold Moon said, tossing cereal into a pot of boiling water.
Tika's larder wasn't well stocked, Tasselhoff added in apology. We've got a loaf of bread, some dried beef, half a moldy cheese, and the oatmeal. Tika must eat her meals out.
Riverwind and I didn't bring any provisions, Gold Moon said. We really didn't expect to make this trip.
Tanis was about to ask her more about her song and the staff, but the others started waking up as they smelled food. Caraman yawned, stretched, and stood up. Walking over to peer into the cookpot, he groaned.
Oatmeal? Is that all?
There'll be less for dinner.
Tasselhoff grinned.
Tighten your belt. You're gaining weight anyhow.
The big man sighed dismally. The sparse breakfast was cheerless in the cold dawn. Sturm, refusing all offers of food, went outside to keep watch. Tanis could see the night, sitting on a rock, staring gloomily at the dark clouds that trailed wispy fingers along the still water of the lake. Caraman ate his share of the food quickly, gulped down his brother's portion, and then appropriated Sturm's when the night walked out. Then the big man sat, watching wistfully, while the rest finished.
"You gonna eat that?"
he asked, pointing to Flint's share of bread. The dwarf scowled. Tasselhoff, seeing the warrior's eyes roam over to his plate, crammed his bread into his mouth, nearly choking himself in the process.
At least it kept him quiet, Tanis thought, glad for the respite from the Kender's shrill voice.
Tass had been teasing Flint unmercifully all morning, calling him seamaster and shipmate, asking him the price of fish and how much he would charge to ferry them back across the lake. Flint finally threw a rock at him and Tanis sent Tass down to the lake to scrub out the pans. The half-elf walked to the back of the cave.
"How are you this morning, Raistlin?" he asked. "We're going to have to be moving out soon."
"I am much better,"
the mage replied in his soft, whispering voice. He was drinking some herbal concoction of his own making. Tanis could see small, feathery green leaves floating in steaming water. It gave off a bitter, acrid odor, and Raistlin grimaced as he swallowed it. Tasselhoff came bounding back into the cave, pots and tin plates clattering loudly. Tanis gritted his teeth at the noise, started to reprimand the kender, then changed his mind. It wouldn't do any good. Flint, seeing the tension on Tanis's face, grabbed the pots from the kender and began packing them away.
"Be serious," the dwarf hissed at Tasselhoff, "or I'll take you by the topknot and tie you to a tree as a warning to all kender."
Tass reached out and plucked something from the dwarf's beard.
"Look!"
The kender held it up gleefully.
"Seaweed!"
Flint, roaring, made a grab for the kender, but Tass skipped out of his way agilely. There was a rustling sound as Sturm shoved aside the brush covering the doorway. His face was dark and brooding.
"Stop this,"
Sturm said, glowering at Flint and Tass, his mustaches quivering. His dour gaze turned on Tanis.
"I could hear these two, clear down by the lake. They'll have every goblin in Kryn on us. We've got to get out of here. Well, which way are we headed?"
An uneasy silence fell. Everyone stopped what he was doing and looked at Tanis, with the exception of Raistlin. The mage was wiping his cup out with a white cloth, cleaning it fastidiously. He continued working, eyes downcast, as though totally uninterested. Tanis sighed and scratched his beard. "The theocrat in Solus is corrupt. We know that now. He is using the goblin scum to take control. If he had the staff, he would use it for his own profit. We've searched for a sign of the true gods for years. It seems we may have found one. I am not about to hand it over to that Solus fraud. Tika said she believed the High Seekers in Haven were still interested in the truth. They may be able to tell us about the staff, where it came from, what its powers are. Tass, give me the map." The kender, spilling the contents of several pouches onto the floor, finally produced the parchment requested. "We are here, on the west bank of Crystalmere," Tanis continued. "North and south of us are branches of the Carolus Mountains, which form the boundaries of Solus Vale. There are no known passes through either range, except through Gateway Pass south of Solus."
"Almost certainly held by the goblins," muttered Sturm.
"There are passes at the northeast."
"That's across the lake,"
Flint said in horror.
"Yes."
Tanis kept a straight face. "Across the lake. But those lead to the plains, and I don't believe you want to go that direction." He glanced at Gold Moon and Riverwind. "The west road goes through the Sentinel Peaks and Shadow Canyon to Haven. That seems to me the obvious direction to take." Sturm frowned.
"And if the High Seekers there are as bad as the one in Solus?"
"Then we continue south to Qualinasti."
"Qualinasti?"
Riverwind scowled.
"The Elven lands?
No.
Humans are forbidden to enter. Besides, the way is hidden."
A rasping, hissing sound cut into the discussion. Everyone turned to face Raistlin. As he spoke,
"There is a way."
His voice was soft and mocking. His golden eyes glittered in the cold light of dawn.
"The paths of darkened wood. They lead right to Qualinasti.
Darken wood?
Karaman repeated in alarm.
No, Tanis.
The warrior shook his head.
I'll fight the living any day of the week, but not the dead.
The dead?
Tasselhoff asked eagerly. Tell me, Karaman.
Shut up, Tass.
Sturm snapped.
Darken wood is madness. None who enter have ever returned. You would have us take this prize there, mage?
Hold. Tanis spoke sharply. Everyone fell silent, even Sturm quieted. The knight looked at Tanis's calm, thoughtful face, the almond-shaped eyes that held the wisdom of his many years of wandering. The knight had often tried to resolve within himself why he accepted Tanis's leadership. He was nothing more than a bastard half-elf, after all. He did not come of noble blood. He wore no armor, carried no shield with a proud emblem, yet Sturm followed him, and loved him, and respected him as he respected no other living man. Life was a dark shroud to the Solamnic knight. He could not pretend to ever know or understand it, except through the code of the knights he lived by. Est sulerus aut mythos. My honor is life. The code defined honor and was more complete and detailed and strict than any known on Kryn. The code had held true for 700 years, but Sturm's secret fear was that some day in the final battle, the code would have no answers. He knew that if that day came, Tanis would be at his side, holding the crumbling world together, for while Sturm followed the code, Tanis lived it. Tanis's voice brought the knight's thoughts back to the present. I remind all of you that this staff is not our prize. The staff rightfully belongs to Gold Moon, if it belongs to anyone. We have no more right to it than the Theocrat and Solace. Tanis turned to Gold Moon. What is your will, lady? Gold Moon stared from Tanis to Sturm. Then she looked at Riverwind. You know my mind, he said coldly. But you are chieftain's daughter. He rose to his feet, ignoring her pleading gaze. He stalked outside. What did he mean? Tanis asked. He wants us to leave you. Take the staff to Haven. Gold Moon answered, her voice low. He says you are adding to our danger. We would be safer on our own.
Adding to your danger?
Flint exploded.
Why, we wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have nearly drowned, again, if it hadn't been for...
The dwarf began to sputter in his rage. Tanis held up his hand. Enough. He scratched his beard. You will be safer with us. Will you accept our help?
I will, Gold Moon answered gravely. For a short distance, at least.
Good, Tanis said.
Tass, you know your way through Solace Vale. You are our guide, and remember, we're not on a picnic.
Yes, Tanis,
the Kender said, subdued. He gathered his many pouches, hung them around his waist and over his shoulders. Passing Gold Moon, he knelt swiftly and patted her hand. Then he was out the cave entrance. The rest hastily gathered their gear together and followed.
It's going to rain again,
Flint grumbled, glancing up at the lowering clouds.
I should have stayed in Solace.
Muttering, he walked off, adjusting his battle axe on his back. Tanis, waiting for Gold Moon and River Wind, smiled and shook his head. At least some things never changed, dwarves among them. River Wind took their packs from Gold Moon and slung them over his shoulder.
I have made certain the boat is well hidden and secure, he told Tanis. The stoic mask was in place again this morning. In case we need it.
A good idea,
Tanis said. Thank...
If you will go ahead.
Riverwind motioned.
I will come behind and cover our tracks.
Tanis started to speak, to thank the plainsman. But Riverwind had already turned his back and was beginning his work. Walking up the path, the half-elf shook his head. Behind him, he could hear Gold Moon speaking softly in her own language. Riverwind replied. One harsh word. Tanis heard Gold Moon sigh, then all other words were lost in the sound of crackling brush as Riverwind obliterated all traces of their passing. Chapter 7 The Story of the Staff, Strange Clerics, Eerie Feelings. The thick woods of Solace Vale were a green mass of vibrant life. Beneath the dense roof of the Valenwoods flourished thistlebrush and greenwall. The ground was crisscrossed with the bothersome tangleshoot vines. These had to be trod on with great care, or they would suddenly snake around an ankle, trapping the helpless victim until he was devoured by one of the many predatory animals lurking in the vale, thus providing Tangleshoot with what it needed to live. Blood. It took over an hour of hacking and chopping through the brush to get to the Haven Road. All of them were scratched, torn, and tired, and the long stretch of smooth-packed dirt that carried travelers to Haven, or beyond, was a welcome sight. It wasn't until they stopped just in sight of the road and rested that they realized there were no sounds. A hush had fallen over the land, as if every creature were holding its breath, waiting. Now that they had reached the road, no one was particularly eager to step out of the shelter of the brush.
"Do you think it's safe?"
Caraman asked, peering through a hedge.
"Safe or not, it's the way we have to go,"
Tanis snapped.
"Unless you can fly, or unless you want to go back into the forest. It took us an hour to travel a few hundred yards. We ought to reach the crossroads next week at that pace."
The big man flushed, chagrined.
"I didn't mean..."
"I'm sorry," Tanis sighed. He too looked down the road. The Valenwoods formed a dark corridor in the gray light. "I don't like it any better than you do."
"Do we separate, or stay together?"
Sturm interrupted what he considered idle chatter with cold practicality.
"We stay together,"
Tanis replied. Then, after a moment, he added, "Still, someone ought to scout."
"I will, Tanis,"
Tass volunteered, popping out of the bush beneath Tanis's elbow.
"No one would ever suspect a Kender traveling alone."
Tanis frowned.
Tass was right.
No one would suspect him. Kender were all afflicted with wanderlust, traveling throughout Kryn in search of adventure. But Tass had the disconcerting habit of forgetting his mission and wandering off if something more interesting caught his attention.
"Very well,"
Tanis said finally. "But remember, Tasselhoff Burfoot, keep your eyes open and your wits about you. No roaming off the road, and above all..." Tanis fixed the Kender's eye with his own sternly. "Keep your hands out of other people's belongings."
"Unless they're bakers,"
Caraman added. Tass giggled, pushed his way through the final few feet of brush, and started down the road, his hoopack staff digging holes in the mud, his pouches jouncing up and down as he walked. They heard his little voice in a Kender trail song.
"Your one true love's a sailing ship that anchors at our pier. We lift her sails, we man her decks, we scrub the portholes clear. And yes, our lighthouse shines for her, and yes, our shores are warm. We steer her into harbor, any port in a storm. The sailors stand upon the docks, the sailors stand in line, as thirsty as a dwarf for gold or centaurs for cheap wine. For all the sailors love her and flock to where she's moored, each man hoping that he might go down all hands on board.
Tanis, grinning, allowed a few minutes to pass after hearing the last verse of Tass's song before starting out. Finally, they stepped out on the road with as much fear as a troupe of unskilled actors facing a hostile audience. It felt as if every eye on Kryn was on them. The deep shade under the flame-colored leaves made it impossible to see anything in the woods, even a few feet from the road. Sturm walked ahead of the group, alone, in bitter silence. Tanis knew that though the knight held his head proudly, he was slogging through his own darkness. Caramon and Raistlin followed. Tanis kept his eyes on the mage, concerned about his ability to keep up. Raistlin had experienced some difficulty in getting through the brush, but he was moving along well now. He leaned on his staff with one hand, holding open a book with the other. Tanis at first wondered what the mage was studying, then realized it was his spellbook. It was the curse of the Magi that they must constantly study and recommit their spells to memory every day. The words of magic flame in the mind then flicker and die when the spell is cast. Each spell burns up some of the magician's physical and mental energy until he is totally exhausted and must rest before he can use his magic again. Flint stumped along on the other side of Caramon. The two began to argue softly about the 10-year-old boating accident.
"Trying to catch fish with your bare hands!"
Flint grumbled in disgust. Tanis came last, walking next to the plainsman. He turned his attention to Gold Moon, seeing her clearly in the flecked gray light beneath the trees. He noticed lines around her eyes that made her appear older than her 29 years.
"Our lives have not been easy," Gold Moon confided to him as they walked. "Riverwind and I have loved each other many years. But it is the law of my people that a warrior who wants to marry his chieftain's daughter must perform some great feat to prove himself worthy. It was worse with us. Riverwind's family was cast out of our tribe years ago for refusing to worship our ancestors. His grandfather believed in ancient gods who had existed before the cataclysm, though he could find little evidence of them left on Kryn. My father was determined I should not marry so far beneath my station. He sent Riverwind on an impossible quest to find some object with holy properties that would prove the existence of these ancient gods. Of course, my father didn't believe such an object existed. He hoped Riverwind would meet his death, or that I would come to love another." She looked up at the tall warrior walking beside her and smiled. But his face was hard, his eyes staring far away. Her smile faded. Sighing, she continued her story, speaking softly, more to herself than Tanis. "Riverwind was gone long years, and my life was empty. I sometimes thought my heart would die. Then, just a week ago, he returned. He was half dead, out of his mind with a raging fever. He stumbled into camp and fell at my feet, his skin burning to the touch. In his hand he clutched this staff. We had to pry his fingers loose, even unconscious he would not release it. He raved in his fever about a dark place, a broken city, where death had black wings. Then, when he was nearly wild with fear and terror, and the servants had to tie his arms to the bed, he remembered a woman. A woman dressed in blue light. She came to him in the dark place, he said, and healed him, and gave him the staff. When he remembered her, he grew calmer, and his fever broke. 2 days ago,
she paused. Had it really only been 2 days, it seemed a lifetime. Sighing, she continued.
He presented the staff to my father, telling him it had been given to him by a goddess, though he did not know her name. My father looked at this staff.
Gold Moon held it up
and commanded it to do something. Anything.
Nothing happened. He threw it back to Riverwind, proclaiming him a fraud, and ordered the people to stone him to death as punishment for his blasphemy. Gold Moon's face grew pale as she spoke. Riverwind's face dark and shadowed.
The tribe bound Riverwind and dragged him to the grieving wall,
she said, barely speaking above a whisper.
They started hurling rocks. He looked at me with so much love, and he shouted that not even death would separate us. I couldn't bear the thought of living my life alone without him. I ran to him. The rocks struck us.
Gold Moon put her hand to her forehead, wincing in remembered pain, and Tanis's attention was drawn to a fresh, jagged scar on her tanned skin.
There was a blinding flash of light. When Riverwind and I could see again, we were standing on the road outside of Solace. The staff glowed blue, then dimmed and faded until it is as you see it now. It was then we determined to go to Haven and ask the wise men at the temple about this staff.
Riverwind, Tanis asked, troubled,
what do you remember of this broken city? Where was it?
Riverwind didn't answer. He glanced at Tanis out of the corner of his dark eyes, and it was obvious his thoughts had been far away. Then he stared off into the shadowy trees.
Tanis Half-Elven,
he said finally.
That is your name?
Among humans, that is what I am called, Tanis answered. My elvish name is long and difficult for humans to pronounce. Riverwind frowned.
Why is it, he asked, that you are called half-elf and not half-man?
The question struck Tanis like a blow across the face. He could almost envision himself sprawling in the dirt and had to force himself to stop and swallow an angry retort. He knew Riverwind was asking this question for a reason. It had not been meant as an insult. This was a test, Tanis realized. He chose his words carefully.
According to the humans, half an elf is but part of a whole being.
Half a man is a cripple. Riverwind considered this, finally nodded once, abruptly, and answered Tanis's question.
I wandered many long years, he replied. Often I had no idea where I was. I followed the sun and the moons and the stars. My last journey is like a dark dream.
He was silent for a moment. When he spoke, it was as if he were talking from some great distance.
It was a city once beautiful, with white buildings supported by tall columns of marble. But it is now as if some great hand had picked up the city and cast it down a mountainside. The city is now very old and very evil.
Death on black wings, Tanis said softly.
It rose like a god from the darkness. Its creatures worshipped it, shrieking and howling.
The plainsman's face paled beneath his sun-baked skin. He was sweating in the chill morning air.
I can speak of it no more.
Gold Moon laid her hand on his arm, and the tension in his face eased.
And out of the horror came a woman who gave you the staff.
Tanis pursued. She healed me. River Wind said simply, I was dying. Tanis stared intently at the staff Gold Moon held in her hand. It was just a plain, ordinary staff that he never noticed until his attention was called to it. A strange device was carved on the top, and feathers, such as the barbarians admire, were tied around it. Yet, he had seen it glow blue. He had felt its healing powers. Was this a gift from ancient gods, come to aid them in their time of need? Or was it evil? What did he know of these barbarians anyway? Tanis thought about Raistlin's claim that the staff could only be touched by those pure of heart. He shook his head. It sounded good. He wanted to believe it. Tanis, lost in thought, felt Gold Moon touch his arm. He looked up to see Sturm and Caramon signaling. The half-elf suddenly realized he and the plainsmen had fallen far behind the others. He broke into a run. What is it? Sturm pointed. The scout returns, he said dryly. Tasselhoff was running down the road toward them. He waved his arms three times. Into the brush, Tanis ordered. The group hurriedly left the road and plunged into the bushes and scrub trees growing along the south edge, all except Sturm. Come on! Tanis put his hand on the knight's arm. Sturm pulled away from the half-elf. I will not hide in a ditch, the knight stated coldly. Sturm! Tanis began fighting to control his rising anger. He choked back bitter words that would do no good and might cause irreparable harm. Instead, he turned from the knight, his lips compressed, and waited in grim silence for the kender. Tass came dashing up, pouches and packs bouncing wildly as he ran. Clerics! He gasped. A party of clerics! 8! Sturm sniffed. I thought it was a battalion of goblin guards, at least. I believe we can handle a party of clerics.
I don't know, Tasselhoff said dubiously. I've seen clerics from every part of Kryn, and I've never seen any like these.
He glanced down the road apprehensively, then gazed up at Tanis, unusual seriousness in his brown eyes.
Do you remember what Tika said about the strange men in Solace, hanging around with Hedrick? How they were hooded and dressed in heavy robes? Well, that describes these clerics exactly, and Tanis. They gave me an eerie feeling.
The kender shuddered.
They'll be in sight in a few moments.
Tanis glanced at Sturm. The knight raised his eyebrows. Both of them knew that kenders did not feel the emotion of fear, yet were extremely sensitive to other creatures' natures. Tanis couldn't remember when the sight of any being on Kryn had ever given Tass an eerie feeling, and he had been with the kender in some tight spots.
Here they come, Tanis said suddenly.
He and Sturm and Tass moved back into the shadows of the trees to the left, watching as the clerics slowly rounded a bend in the road. They were too far away for the half-elf to be able to tell much about them, except that they were moving very slowly, dragging a large handcart behind them.
Maybe you should talk to them, Sturm,
Tanis said softly.
We need information about the road ahead, but be careful, my friend.
I'll be careful, Sturm said, smiling. I have no intention of throwing my life away needlessly. The knight gripped Tanis's arm a moment in silent apology, then dropped his hand to loosen his sword in its antique scabbard. He walked across to the other side of the road and leaned up against a broken-down wooden fence, head bowed as though resting. Tanis stood a moment, irresolute, then turned and made his way through the brush, Tasselhoff at his heels.
What is it?
Caramon grunted as Tanis and Tass appeared. The big warrior shifted his girth, causing his arsenal of weapons to clank loudly. The rest of the companions were huddled together, concealed behind thick clumps of brush, yet able to get a clear view of the road.
Hush!
Tanis knelt down between Caramon and Riverwind, who crouched in the brush, a few feet to Tanis's left.
Clerics,
he whispered. A group of them coming down the road. Sturm's going to question them.
Clerics!
Caramon snorted derisively and settled back comfortably on his heels. But Raistlin stirred, restlessly.
Clerics, he whispered thoughtfully. I do not like this.
What do you mean? Asked Tanis. Raistlin peered at the half-elf from the dark shadows of his hood. All Tanis could see were the mage's golden hourglass eyes, narrow slits of cunning and intelligence.
Strange clerics.
Raistlin spoke with elaborate patience as one speaks to a child.
The staff has healing, clerical powers, such powers as have not been seen on Kryn since the Cataclysm. Caramon and I saw some of these cloaked and hooded men in Solace. Don't you find it odd, my friend, that these clerics and this staff turned up at the same time, in the same place, when neither has been seen before? Perhaps this staff is truly theirs, by right.
Tanis glanced at Gold Moon. Her face was shadowed with worry. Surely she must be wondering the same thing. He looked back at the road again. The cloaked figures were moving at a crawling pace, pulling the cart. Sturm sat on the fence, stroking his mustaches. The companions waited in silence. Gray clouds massed overhead, the sky grew darker, and soon water began to drip through the branches of the trees.
There. It's raining, Flint grumbled. It isn't enough that I have to squat in a bush like a toad, now I get soaked to the skin.
Tanis glared at the dwarf. Flint mumbled and fell silent. Soon the companions could hear nothing but the rain splattering against the already wet leaves, drumming on shield and helm. It was a cold, steady rain, the kind that seeps through the thickest cloak. It ran off Caramon's dragon helm and trickled down his neck. Raistlin began to shiver and cough, covering his mouth with his hand to muffle the sound as everyone stared at him in alarm. Tanis looked out to the road. Like Tas, he had never seen anything to compare to these clerics in his 100 years of life on Kryn. They were tall, about 6 feet in height. Long robes shrouded their bodies, hooded cloaks covered the robes, even their feet and hands were wrapped in cloth like bandages covering leprous wounds. As they neared Sturm, they glanced around warily. One of them stared straight into the bush where the companions were hiding. They could see only dark, glittering eyes through a swath of cloth.
Hail, Knight of Solamnia,
the lead cleric said in the common tongue. His voice was hollow, lisping, an inhuman voice. Tanis shivered.
Greetings, brethren, Sturm answered, also in common. I have traveled many miles this day, and you are the first travelers I have passed. I have heard strange rumors, and I seek information about the road ahead. Where do you come from?
We come from the east originally, the cleric answered, but today we travel from Haven. It is a chill, bitter day for journeying, knight, which is perhaps why you find the road empty. We ourselves would not undertake such a journey save we are driven by necessity. We did not pass you on the road, so you must be traveling from Solace, sir knight.
Sturm nodded. several of the clerics standing at the rear of the cart turned their hooded faces toward each other, muttering. The lead cleric spoke to them in a strange, guttural language. Tanis looked at his companions. Tasselhoff shook his head, as did the rest of them. None of them had heard it before. The cleric switched back to Common.
I am curious to hear these rumors you speak of, knight.
There is talk of armies in the north, Sturm replied. I am traveling that way, to my homeland of Salamnia. I would not want to run into a war to which I had not been invited.
We have not heard these rumors, the cleric answered. So far as we know, the road to the north is clear.
Ah, that's what comes of listening to drunken companions, Sturm shrugged. But what is this necessity you speak of that drives the brethren out into such foul weather?
We seek a staff,
the cleric answered readily,
a blue crystal staff. We heard that it had been sighted in Solis. Do you know aught of it?
Yes, Sturm answered. I heard of such a staff in Solis. I heard of the armies to the north from the same companions. Am I to believe these stories or not? This appeared to confound the cleric for a moment. He glanced around, as if uncertain how to act. Tell me, said Sturm, lounging back against the fence. Why do you seek a blue crystal staff? Surely one of plain, sturdy wood would suit you, reverend gentleman, better.
It is a sacred staff of healing,
the cleric replied gravely.
One of our brothers is sorely ill. He will die without the blessed touch of this